thing about emotions is emotions come. You can't control whether an emotion comes up or not.
No.
In your example of business, you can control how you decide to manage those or not. Hello and welcome to episode 80 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
And we have to start this week with some disappointing news.
Wah, wah, wah.
That we're not really that disappointed about. But I did have my heart in my mouth. So what we're talking about is we're talking about the British Podcast Awards, which so many of you voted for us as the listener's choice thing. And we got into the top 20 and we were super excited. And then they did the countdown of who'd won and they did it with that, you know, their countdown that you don't know. Oh, am I in second place or have I not got anything? Oh, am I in first place or... I've not got anything. So that was that. But thank you very much for voting for us. And it was fun anyway. And I also thought we have got a lot of new listeners still coming in. So we are getting 10,000 downloads a week of the podcast episodes. So some of you listening won't yet have heard from the beginning and they won't necessarily know who we are. So we say at the beginning, Louise Fletcher and Alice Sheridan, like everybody might know that, but you probably don't know who we are. So I thought it might just be nice just to take 2 minutes to say who we are and why we even bothered starting a podcast in the first place. Louise, you're on the spot.
Yeah, really am, because I didn't even know you were going to say that. So I'm Louise Fletcher. I am a, I suppose, abstract landscape painter. I live in Yorkshire. I met Alice a few years ago and we met online. We've only ever actually met in person a couple of times. I had the idea for a podcast. Turns out Alice had also had an idea for a podcast. And so when I approached her and asked her if she wanted to do it, she said yes.
Because I didn't want to do it on my own.
Yeah, I didn't want to do it on my own either. I'm very admiring of people who sit and podcast on their own.
Yeah, I think it might be quite silent.
And we live at opposite ends of the country.
We do. So I'm in London. I'm trained as a graphic designer and I started painting about 10 years ago now, very small scale from my spare bedroom, and just year on year have concentrated on growing it, pushing my creative practice, building new things to it every year. And now I have a big studio outside of my home and who knows what next year is going to bring. But we both do other things to help artists. So Louise has a course, I have a membership, but the podcast has taken over really in terms of how we can help other people. For me, it certainly has. It's taken over from a blog. You still write a blog, don't you, regularly?
I do, although I write far less blog post than I used to, because I've often talked out whatever I've got to say on
here.
And I do a weekly newsletter, which is for artists. And so between those two things, it feels like I've said everything by the time it comes to the blog. So I do occasionally write blog posts, but I'm not as good as I used to be with it.
This is the problem, isn't it? It should be a deep as anything creative well, but in theory, you should just repurpose all the same old things. But I think we get bored of doing that, don't we?
I know. I mean, I would actually think it would be a good idea and a good public service probably to take the show notes, and instead of just writing the show notes on my blog, I should write it up as a blog post with my additional thoughts and reflections since we talked, because often something comes up in the conversation that sparks an idea. But there's only so many hours in a day, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah.
At the moment, there are not enough hours in the day for that.
So that's us. And we know it's interesting. I see that sometimes we're getting tagged and pinged on some of the work that you do on Instagram. And I know that we have people listening who are at the beginning of their creative journey, or who are sculptors.
We don't have any sculptors listening that we know of.
No. I've got that Bristol plinth sculpture on my mind. Sculptors or people who work in all sorts of different mediums. And I think that that probably is something that we didn't necessarily expect, that it was going to be such a broad range of people listening. But if I'm totally honest, we pick subjects each week very much according to what has come up in the week, what is relevant, and what we feel that we want to talk about. So although it's for you, it's just kind of what comes up in our brains. But having said that, if there is ever a question that you would like to have us talk about, then do please send a question through to bit.ly/artjuiceq, capital Q, or on both of our websites, that's louisefletcherart.com or alicesheridan.com. If you find the Four Artists podcast page, there's a place there where you can submit a question, because over the summer we will be settling down and thinking of some topics to come ahead. So it would be lovely to hear from you. So, first of all, tell us how your week has been. What have you been working on? Okay.
I don't even know. I've been racing around. My course is underway now, so we're in module 2. And we're at the beginning of the course is always the busiest time, because people are getting used to the ideas that I'm sharing and struggling or enjoying or, you know, having all the reactions. So that always happens at the beginning. So that's busy. I also have my membership that I need to keep ticking over and pay attention to, obviously, during that time, which so I've got that going on. I'm painting because I'm filming myself for the course. So I have to find time for that, even if it feels like there isn't time. And I've now become the neighborhood hairdresser, it seems.
Oh, have you?
Yeah. So in between, I fitted in a couple of haircuts. And I am going to I did my builder's hair yesterday. That was going great until I, at the beginning, I forgot to put the clipper guard on. So he's got a much shorter haircut than I originally planned, because I had to fade that in. And I think tomorrow I'm going to cut my stepdad's hair, because my mum's been doing it with scissors. But now, on top of everything else, I'm the neighborhood hairdresser now.
Yeah, have clippers, we'll travel.
Yeah, and people keep saying, oh, I don't think I'm going to go back to the hairdresser now. And I'm like, well, yeah, I think you are, actually, because the novelty is going to wear off once I get used to this.
But definitely. I'm really interested in this. And I know you've spoken about it before, filming yourself while you paint. Mm. Isn't it interesting how, like you said, even in this week, you know, because I've committed to doing it, I have to do it.
Yes.
We've had conversations this week with a couple of people who are feeling a bit low about creating their work. And it's interesting that what's come up, and I think we feel as artists that making our work should make us feel better. And sometimes it doesn't do that. Sometimes it's not just the procrastination of getting into it. Sometimes you get to the end of the day and it doesn't, or you're not happy with what you've done. And we've been talking a bit about how taking a step back can actually help you enjoy it a little bit more. But I just think this idea of, I don't know where it came from, because I'm sure it didn't always used to be this way, that making art should always be joyful and fun, isn't necessarily the way it always is. And I just think,
I find that interesting, because it is for me. But I have, this right behind me, you can see, no one else can, there's a big grayish type painting.
Yeah.
I took that 5 steps backwards in a really fun afternoon where I thought I was doing brilliantly. And then I came in and looked in it. I was like, ooh, it was better before. But the act of doing it. So I had a day this week where I had to film myself. I came in and I knew I couldn't face the big paintings. I didn't have any ideas for them. And I thought, I'll just ruin them. So I went into what I always do, which is working in the small squares, taping off a big piece of paper, working with only 4 colours, black and white and 2 colours, and seeing what I could do. By the end of the morning, I was totally absorbed in that, totally absorbed and having fun. And my lack of motivation was gone. And then in the afternoon, I took those colours and worked on an old panel, went over what I'd done and made a new painting that I actually love, and I made it in an afternoon. And so I don't think I ever have the feeling of it's not joyful like I'm dancing around, but joyful as in it's calming and centering, and whether or not I get a result, I don't care whether I get a result. I think if I had a show coming up, maybe, you know, 2 weeks from now, but because we don't at the moment, so there's none of that. But I just don't.
Don't you ever doubt yourself while you're in the middle of painting?
Oh, I suppose I doubt. Is this actually any good?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I can't do anything about that. So I don't, it doesn't, there's enough history gone by and enough sales gone by to tell me that somebody will think it's good enough.
Or you'll get there in the end.
I'll get there in the end. But I do understand that it's very different if you have like regular events or you've got things to produce for certain times. And I'm fortunate enough that the other things I do mean I don't have that financial pressure from painting. And that would be different, I think. If your sole income comes from your creative product, whether it's art or design or anything, then you are pressured, aren't you? Then you are pressured to produce results. But I still think the secret to getting the results is to not care about the results.
Yeah, I agree with you with that. I think the secret is to do whatever you need to get over that hurdle. I think what I'm getting at is the sense that and it seems to be like you're saying that the answer is always in turning up again. And I agree with that entirely. But I don't think it's always in turning up again relentlessly every day, for example. I think sometimes there are times where it's good to take a break, step back, do something else, get new impetus in.
Yeah.
And just kind of just shift the cycle that's going on if you've got caught in that trap. So
yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, in my situation, because my painting time is always so limited, I don't think I get to the place where I don't have that, those breaks. Do you know what I mean? I might 2 weeks where I can't even come and paint. So
yeah,
it's very different if you're going in for 5 or 6 hours a day to paint. Yes, I agree. Totally.
Oh, I'd be exhausted if I did that, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. So, interesting week. I've had an interesting week in the studio. Usually Monday is my admin day, but I had quite a lot going on last week, and I thought that this week would only function properly if I made sure that Monday was a studio day. So there you go. Sometimes you do get the fire in your belly from going in, doing the painting, doing the work, and then the rest of the week just flows. And my week was kind of front loaded with studio time, which felt really good. And I think as a result of that, I've felt like I've been quite fired up this week, which is a bit scary.
Oh no, I've seen you fired up.
There was something I wrote a post on. It's like, it's not a problem having the ideas, it's the editing them. It's like, you know, okay, just don't rush into that. So I have rushed into a new idea for my membership of having progress pods without fully knowing quite what that looks like. So we're going to work that one out because I think that's quite good fun. And also I have something to break to you. You know that nice pink and green soft painting that you really like?
Oh, the Turner one. Yes.
Ooh, gone.
Oh, what's it covered up with?
Well, I just decided that I was kind of shushing around the edges a little bit, and I was trying to kind of keep it, I don't know, and it was one of those ones where I worked on it for about a good few hours, and then I just thought, oh, I've just lost the juice in this.
Yeah, I know what you
mean. And then I added something else and it totally changed it into something different, and now I'm excited about it again.
Oh good. I know exactly what you mean though, because this grey one behind me that I've ruined again was something I really liked, but I was holding on to it wasn't good enough, but I was holding on to it because I liked it. And eventually you've just got to go, look, I've not managed to get this anywhere.
It's almost like there's a thing in business, and I talk to people about this all the time. They're like, oh, I'm a bit worried about my website, or I'm worried about this, or I don't think the newsletter's great. And I'm like, just do it. Just send it. You know, it's your first iteration, your first version of something. And we tend to get really precious about that and wanting to make it perfect. And then we hold on to it too tightly. You've just got to do that first round and get it out, but know that it's going to change. Yeah. Totally know that it's going to change. And I just have to keep reminding myself about that. And I sometimes wish that maybe if I divided my painting into different stages and I just told myself, this is just the beginning, this is just the beginning, this is just the beginning, this is just, I would get less, because what happens is when you're in those beginning stages, you get something that you really like.
Yes.
And then you want to make that work.
Yeah.
And I don't know, if I just had another layer in my brain that could shut down this, you don't need to make this work at this stage. Just keep painting, almost as if you're painting on a blank canvas again.
Yeah, because that soft pink and green, it was very drippy and misty, I remember.
Yeah.
That will come back again if it's meant to.
There's a little bit of it
at the time. But yeah. I mean, in a different painting, yeah. You know, it'll come back if it's meant to. And that's why I agree with you, though. It is hard because I'm always freest on the first layer.
Yeah.
And always get cool effects from being free like that. And then, like you said, you've just got to know, okay, that was nice. Take a picture. Maybe yeah. Put it in my sketchbook, keep it. Oh, that was good. And then move on.
I think for me, what it was is that I was trying to work with a new way of using paint on those. And it began to be a little bit obsessively only about that.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
So by introducing something radically different, you know, I've had that learning of how to work with paint in that way, and I can bring it back again anytime I want. So anyway, that's quite exciting. Don't know where that's going, but
R.I.P. Turner painting. Rest in peace.
Okay, so on the back, kind of not winning the podcast awards, but also other things that have been around this week. We are talking about emotions in business and how sometimes we can let them get the better of us. So I think these things come up all the time, particularly when it's something that you feel strongly about. But I've got two examples this week that I thought it was interesting how people jumped in with such an emotional response to both of those situations, and it didn't actually help the outcome. So let me tell you what the first one was. The first one was an artist who had collected work, a group of 10 pieces from a framer. And the framer had, in her words, slashed my paintings, but had framed them anyway and had charged her the full price, and had only mentioned it in passing as they were being handed back. And within the group, everybody dived in. That's appalling. You should sue him. He should have insurance. You need to name and shame him publicly. You know, honestly, that the reaction was enormous to it. And I just said, well, hang on a minute. We actually haven't seen the damage. I'm guessing that if he framed them and returned them to you, and at that point she'd shared a screenshot of what she said and what he'd responded. And it seemed to me that he was basically saying, look, I know you have a show coming up, so I've gone ahead and framed them anyway. I'm really sorry, but here they are. I'm hoping you might be able to repair them. Now, should he probably have said, obviously I won't charge you for framing those in case you can't? Probably, yeah. But it seemed to me like genuine, and it didn't seem to me like a massive big slash, to be honest. But it was just interesting that everybody dived in with this huge, great accusation rather than looking for what is the resolution for this.
Right.
And then it becomes a relationship that you can't rescue.
Yeah.
Which doesn't help.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I get it. You know, you give your work to a framer, you want it to come back in one piece. I get that, obviously.
Yeah. And there is also a huge human tendency, isn't there, to judge and to jump in and take a position on things like that, which you see all the time. And it's especially easy to do online. Like if they'd all been standing in the framing shop with the guy or woman who did the framing, they probably wouldn't have reacted quite as strongly.
I think it's this way of rather than just trying to wait and see what the full picture is. You know, people making assumptions about things without actually asking. That was kind of what surprised me. You know, even when she did the initial post about it, she didn't say, look, here's the slash, you can see, what would you do with this? She showed a picture of the original painting, which is what made me think, well, actually, what has actually happened here? Because we're all slamming this guy without actually seeing what the damage is. So
what was the reaction when you asked, when you brought in a more considered viewpoint?
I don't know why you're trying to defend him.
Right.
I'm not. I'm, you know, just saying that they're probably, if he framed them, there probably was a reason that he thought maybe you'd be able to restore them. You know, canvases can be restored.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I think people want to be angry. So that brings me on to the second one. The second situation is a rather expensive business course that I was part of a couple of years ago. And they have an alumni group for it. And the decision was made as presented that the alumni group was going to be withdrawn at the same time as there was going to be a new membership offering that was quite expensive. And the resulting comments and feedback to that was quite astonishing. And I admit, I was stunned at the decision because it felt like it went against the whole values and ethos of that person and the community that they had created within that space. It wasn't so relevant for me. I have business support in other ways that I'm part of. I didn't feel it as a huge loss. But I can imagine that for people who had just taken that program this year and had just come to the end of it, to suddenly be offered, right, well, you have nothing, or you can upgrade to 150 a month, when they actually haven't yet even had time to implement the learning. So I understand the business idea behind it, and the person in charge, I have to say, he did a fantastic job on the whole of coming back saying, look, we want to find out where you were. This is why we made the decision. And he showed the interaction on a graph in the group. He said, like, people weren't commenting here. You know, people weren't engaged. It doesn't serve you. So we thought this is a better way of serving you. They were perhaps a little bit slow to do that. But that's what happens when you're a big company. You need to have time to discuss it with other people and find out what you're going to do going forward. But it was interesting because it created this big upsurge. And the learning for me as a group owner in that sense is that people learn in so many different ways that you're not aware of. So he'd made an assumption that because the interaction levels in the group were low, nobody was interested and nobody was getting benefit from it. And I actually went back and I searched my comments and my feedback and my responses to other people in the group, helping them out with various things, asking when I was stuck. And, you know, it just really showed me that, and lots of people commented, just because I don't comment and interact doesn't mean I'm not still learning and watching and doing things in my own time. And, you know, they actually made a really good decision at the end of it, which was to close the current group and to reopen a new one so that if you were still engaged and involved, you could move over to the new one. So the end resolution was good, but it was emotional watching, and I don't mind admit, I was cross on behalf of people who had invested in this thing and then were being told they had no way of having support onwards at the end of it. And this is not team support at the end of it. This is amongst peers.
Yeah.
And maybe just that amongst peer thing is important to me. So
this is so difficult because I'm experiencing some alumni group issues of my own, not issues, it's fine, but realizing also free Facebook group issues. You know, yep. I have a free Facebook group and I have two actually, which emerged by accident. And I get drawn into things in there which need dealing with and it takes time. And part of me thinks I've got too many free things going on and I need to sort them out shut something down, you know, streamline. And then I think, oh, but there are people who count on these groups. So then you keep them going. And part of what stops me from doing what I would do if I was the only person in the world and it was all up to me, or if I was the only person who mattered in the world, is that knowing the angry emotional fallout that's going to come if I do shut something down. So if I say one of my free groups where I've had a lot of arguing and stuff to deal with, if I just said that one's going to just go, sorry, it's archived, you can look at it, but you can't join in anymore. There are 15,000 people in that group and they're not going to be happy and they all know where to find me. So you do, as I feel for him also, because you do these things in business, as you said in his case, making assumptions or thinking it's the right thing to do. And then you get sideswiped by a reaction you weren't expecting. And all of a sudden it's all hands on deck trying to deal with the reaction that you've got. He's much bigger than either of our audiences. But so even more, you know, he's got to protect his brand and his name and make sure everyone feels good about him. So I totally see both sides of it. And it does, that fear of upsetting people, it's not fear, but concern about upsetting people is a constant worry for me, you know, of trying to keep. And alumni groups are particularly challenging. The challenge in mine is that last year's course group, there were 300 people in the course, and a lot of the people in the group became very close through the process of the course and through the work they were doing on their art. They became close and supportive of each other, and they've been in the alumni group together now for, you know, quite a while. And I'm very aware that when my current course ends, I'm going to bring new people in there, and that's going to be, I've seen that in other alumni groups. It's always at first like a new year of school with a new bunch of exciting people coming in, and it disrupts the equilibrium, and then it settles back down because only certain people stay engaged and they form new relationships. So I know it will all be fine, but I know I've got that little bit of disruption to come in an existing group. And the people in the group have become, or in any of these groups, like you said, they've become reliant on it for learning, for support, for friendships. It's become a part of their life. You, as the person administering 5 or 6 free Facebook groups and courses and whatever, are thinking, oh, I just can't manage all of it. What can I streamline? And, but there, the thing that he chose to try and streamline was the thing that for a lot of people is their lifeline or a big part of how they get support and help. So it's just really difficult.
Yeah. And I think in that it was paired with the, you either pay my thing.
Yeah. That's different. But then on talking, the other hand,
and also talking to people who have already been paying customers. That's the thing.
Yeah,
it's not just, you're not just talking about a free group.
Yeah.
You're talking about, you know, support for people who've already.
Yeah, and that's why the alumni group, to me, I would hope not to shut it down, because that for me is those people invested in my courses, and I want them to feel like they've got something ongoing from that. Whereas this free group that I run, that's not that. And the anger and reaction that would come from that, it would be exacerbated if I said, but I have this membership group for £18. And yet, if you put yourself in the other person's shoes, why shouldn't they get, now I think $150 or pounds is a lot of money to charge for a monthly membership, but that's the world of business and that's kind of what people charge in those things. But some kind of fee, is that unreasonable for someone to say, for me
if
to...
If it's valuable to you. Yeah,
for me to run a community, for me to create this space for you, for me to dedicate my time to that. I'm not talking about me personally. I'm talking about whoever is running the group. In exchange for that, in his case, for me to have my staff do it. So he has a whole staff infrastructure and costs. And in order for me to have my staff do that, I'm going to have to charge money for it. But then in exchange for the money, I'm going to give you much more than you get for free. In many ways, that's reasonable.
It is. And this is why it was so interesting to see, you know, the different standpoints that people made. And also the thing that was interesting is that people become, and this follows on from the conversation that we were having last week, actually, about how we tend to go black, you know, extreme, this or this with our thinking, this or this. And, you know, people kind of fell down much more on the, this is a great thing, this is a no-brainer for me, I'm in. This is a terrible thing. You're casting aside your alumni. I've totally lost faith in you. And, you know, for me, it probably might make sense for me to be in that membership.
Yeah.
Maybe it would have been a good thing. But my emotional response to the initial announcement was so strong that I couldn't come back from that. That's not actually serving me very well.
No.
So I just think it's interesting how we get ourselves, even in a Facebook group, something that's online, you can get so entrenched in something emotionally that it can take over.
I was thinking one of the things that I think I get less emotional of a business than a lot of artists do, is having worked in corporate world with men at a high level for a long time. And I have had plenty of occasions in my past life where I have cried or wanted to cry in a situation where I was being chastised. Or so once I remember, was quite young, this regional manager we had, and he kept coming in and he always yelled at me. And I remember running upstairs to the upstairs floor of this store where I was working and crying when he couldn't see me, just thinking, I am not going to let him see me cry. But my lip had been wobbling, and I had been, and then in later years, in America, people are very direct when they in business, they don't mess around. And so when someone's angry at you, you know it. And I found that really difficult, especially as a Brit and a woman. So I always react emotionally if I get angry, or I tend to get cryy if I get angry. So that would happen. And I got to the point where if I wanted to be taken seriously in that environment with all men, because there were no women and it wasn't arty, so there was no sensitivity, it was business, I had to separate my own emotions from the business side of it. And I think it serves me well now in these situations when people are upset, because I think I can separate my own personality. Like if I did shut that group down, and if anybody's in that group, I'm not thinking of doing it seriously. But if I did and someone was angry, they're not angry at me, the real person.
No.
They're angry at the idea of me that they have, that they've conjured up.
Yes.
And the expectations that they had of me, which I have now not fulfilled. I heard something, it seems like a change of subject, but it's not. Somebody, I've talked about him before, Kyle Cease. He's a really amazing spiritual guy, but he used to be a comedian.
What? How do you spell his surname?
Cease, like cease and desist, C-E-A-S-E, Kyle Cease. And because he used to be a comedian, he has a funny way of making points. But he said, nobody ever broke your heart. They broke your expectations. Yeah. And this is the same thing. It's whenever we're disappointed in another person, it's because we expected something that they haven't delivered. And we actually have no right to expect. So those people have no right to expect that because he gave that all along, that he has to continue giving that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There's no actual right to anything in life, but we think.
But I think what you have to do is you have to allow that time for the shift in thinking. And I think what happened in that situation was there was an abrupt change with no warning, no notice, no alternative. So it wasn't the fact that it was a decision that was clearly made on very sound principles. It was a presentation thing. It was a timing thing. It was a, you're doing this to everybody in the middle of COVID thing. You know, there's a lot wrapped up in it. Whereas if you have time to respond to that quote, to adjust people's expectations, to explain, to then present, then everyone's like, yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
And people would have a very different emotional response to it. And I think the thing about emotions is emotions come. You can't control whether an emotion comes up or not.
No.
In your example of business, you can control how you decide to manage those or not.
Yeah.
Or you can learn from it the next time a similar situation occurs.
Yep.
But at the time, the emotion rises up.
I'm interested in something about the situation with that group. So he did the, made a bad decision to say three things go in, and but hey, you can spend $150 and come with me in here, because that just seems like a callous money making scheme, and whether it was or not.
Yeah, and I think like he got some, you know, from what he said, you know, some real personal attacks, which is not on. Absolutely not on. Yeah. People being disappointed, I get. People thinking you're making the wrong decision and letting you know about it, I get. Personal attacks, not on.
Always gets personal. Mm-mm. But you said that was really hard emotionally, and I agree with that. I mean, I understand. I don't agree. I understand. I think I'd feel the same. Like, what? You're going to take away this thing and charge me money? You must be kidding me. I'm not spending money with you. But I'm interested that after he's come back and said, I'm sorry, this was the reason. Obviously, I miscalculated. Here's another free group you can all join that's mm-hmm. going to serve that purpose. And I still have the paid thing if you want it.
Yeah.
That you still feel you can't come back from. So he can't win back your trust. He can't. Not the apology and the setting up another free group isn't enough for the emotional response that you had to allow you to go join it now, or is it?
I don't think that the offering that he had was the right offering for me now at the right time anyway. Oh,
yeah.
So I wasn't seriously interested in it. Part of it is that the amount of money involves access to next year's program in advance. But if I'm going to join a membership now, I want to have access to the material now. If the point of the membership is support while you're implementing it, I need access to the current material now, not next summer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe next summer I'll retake it and I'll join and I'll be part of the membership then.
Yeah.
So that
makes sense. Because I was just wondering, in these situations where people are disappointed, is it possible to go back to
recover.
get it back and say, I'm sorry, I just made a big mistake and I'm doing this?
I think sometimes for some people, yes. For some people, no. You've burnt your bridges. For others, it just takes time. And, you know, that's always going to be the case in anywhere where there is a large group of people. You're whatever you do, you're never going to keep everybody happy. And there will always be people who think you're not doing it well enough. You're making a wrong move.
I mean, we've had feedback on things, you know, you said this and I felt very strongly that you shouldn't have said that, or we've had that a few times, not that often because we mostly just talk about art, but anytime we veer off the topic of art, even vaguely, we have a reaction from people. And
which is fine.
It is fine. It's an education that mm-hmm. you realize. In my mind, when I speak, these are just the words coming out of my mouth, and I don't expect anyone to give them any weight or import other than this is what Louise thinks. And, you know, I'm not trying to convert people to any point of view or advocate for anything. It's just, just comes out, and that's what's in my head at that time. But it doesn't seem that way to people who listen to you. They have expectations of you based on their idea. And this applies to anybody who writes a blog or does a video or writes a newsletter, even if it's only to 5 people. People form expectations and they want you to conform. And I've had an example of this. A few years ago, I was I love music and I was quite a fan of this particular American musician. And then he said some things which I didn't agree with, like really didn't agree with, political things.
Yeah.
And I was crushed. I mean, I was just crushed inside. I felt like, oh, I can't buy him.
You feel your time investing in him has been wasted, perhaps.
Yeah, which I don't mean, it's not like I'm not a fangirl or anything. But yeah, the idea that I came to a concert and I spent money and I bought your record, and now you've said this stuff, which just I don't agree with or like. And my expectations have been disappointed. Now, a very similar thing happened. I really love Bruce Springsteen. And many years ago, his songs were always clearly a certain political bent, but I don't think some of his fans realized they were. And eventually, when it became clear that his views were quite, not left-wing, but quite liberal in his attitude, all of the conservative and right-wing fans he had became very angry, very upset. And just like you said, huge emotional response. I'll never listen to one of your records again. I'm going to burn your albums, all of that stuff. And so again, it's expectations, isn't it? It's the, I've thought you were fantastic and I had an idea in my mind of what you believed and what you thought and that you and me would be buddies and we would sit down and have a drink and it would be fantastic. And now you've just ruined it all by having your own opinions, which I don't agree with. And I think that's interesting. So it's not just in business, business is always two people.
Yeah.
Comes down to two people interacting, even if one of them is a member of a large group and one of them is the owner of that group. And in that clash, there's a disappointment of that person's expectations. And they always say that you can live a happy life by having no expectations, but how do you even do that? How do you have no expectations of other people?
Isn't that what some people spend their life trying to do?
I know, because truly, you know.
But for me, you see, that's not a full aiming to live a life without expectations and without emotional ups and downs. That's not living a life to me. I would much rather have something that I fall in love with, believe in, and be disappointed, and then decide whether I'm going to forgive or move on or find something else, than not have that in the first place.
I wonder if, though, it's expectations or hopes. So hopes and dreams are one thing, but expectations rely on other people to do things in the way we want them to. And they're not going to most of the time. So If I have an expectation, and if it was my wedding anniversary, and if I was the kind of person who even remembered my own wedding anniversary, which I'm not, but if I was and I cared about that and Phil didn't do anything for me, and my expectation was of a big romantic day and then he'd forgotten all about it, my hopes would be dashed and I would be angry.
Because you would make it mean that he didn't care about you.
Yeah, but if I noticed all of the things he's done that show that he cares about me the day before, the day after, and everywhere in between, I would realize that it was my expectations that were the problem, because him being who he is, they were unreasonable. Mm. And therefore, and it's spoiling me from enjoying. Now, this is all made up, by the way, because he's the one that remembers it, but it's just an easy example to give. But, you know, then it spoiled everything else that was nice, by having an expectation of something which he could not deliver in that instance. And I think it's the same in business. It's we meet an imagined person. So to these people, the guy running the group was one thing, and then he showed himself to be something else.
Yeah.
Or they perceived he was something different. Really, he was the same guy all along, not changed at all, but they are two different. So the expectation. So I suppose it's, I'm thinking, if we could get to the point where we had hopes and dreams, but when they weren't met, we understood that the other person is just a person doing their best in life generally and might have messed up. Like the framer, he's just doing his best.
Exactly.
He might have messed up, but he didn't mean to. He didn't go, oh, let me slash these paintings and then charge full price. That'll be fun. Most people wake up every day trying to do the best they can. It's just sometimes their best doesn't meet our imagined way the world should be.
And I think just why I wanted to talk about this was, I think we often talk, or we have these things in mind, like, you know, we've spoken about it. Making art is emotional. You've got these emotional battles with yourself, with the ups and the downs, you know, the expectations that you have that come out of it. And it's like artists are some own special brand of people who have this. And, you know, both of these are just, it's just a kind of bringing to the table that this happens in other areas too. It's not just that we're weird, flaky, emotional artists who have this kind of response to things. We're not.
I actually am getting a bit of a feeling of dread in the pit of my stomach.
Oh, no.
Waiting for the day when something like this happens to me, when I do something that causes this kind of reaction, unaware of what I've done until I wake up in the morning and find out.
Well, maybe just knowing that perhaps at some point it's inevitable will help you deal with it when it comes. I tell you what I enjoyed watching this week, just to finish on a little bit of a maybe lighter note before we move on, is I quite enjoyed watching, there was a documentary, an interview with Jermaine Greer, one of those things that you think, I'm going to go to bed. Oh, that's, look, I'll just sit and watch that for an hour instead. And actually, it's led me to order Female Eunuch, which I have never read. Have you ever read it?
I did in college, but honestly, I can't remember a word.
Okay, well, I just kind of thought, you know what? I never read it. It's about time I did. And because I don't really know what her point was and what she stood for, but whenever I've seen her, I just really admire the way she just says what she thinks. Like, is she bordering on rude sometimes? Yeah, probably. Yeah. But she's always just struck me as a woman who is, in some ways, you know, she's quite fair. She's very forthright. She's very clear. She has these expectations of herself, perhaps, and other people. And I just kind of watch her and I just think, that's quite cool. You know, a little bit of that. I'll have a little bit of that, please.
Yes. Do you think she cares if she disappoints people?
No.
No.
But bizarrely, not in an uncaring way.
Exactly.
I think she just thinks, you know, here I am. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm saying. If you are disappointed by that, okay.
I so admire people like that. I once did an exercise for some course where you had to think about the people you most admire in life and look at what you admired, like anybody, famous or unfamous. Yeah. And the thing in common with the people I picked was that they were fully themselves without caring what other people thought, but not in a dictatorial, you know, rampaging through the world Hitler kind of way, but just they were just getting on with their own thing. And they'd say the truth and not care what anyone thinks, because I've never been able to do that. I look at people who can and just, like someone like Maggie Hambling.
Yeah.
Right. I just love her. She doesn't care. She's just getting on with her own thing. Tracy Emin. I mean, they do care. I'm sure they care, but they're just doing their own thing, saying what they want to say and not letting other things come in, considerations about people being upset. Like, if Maggie Hambling had a Facebook group, which I'm sure she never would.
Could you imagine?
She'd give a rat's ass if people were upset when she shut it down. She'd just go have another cigarette.
Love it. Yeah, maybe that's what we need. Maybe we all need a little pin board of who our kind of heroes are in for all those different parts that we think, oh, I'll have a little bit of that today. I'll have a little bit of that today. I just love, there were some interviews of her in the 70s. There was one where a reporter was asking her about, so what does it say in the book or something? And she just basically said, well, that's a stupid question. I just love it. Like, you know, particularly contrasted with today where everybody is all media trained and, you know, politicians squirrel around answers and she just says what she thinks. So, yeah.
Well, and the thing is, when someone like that talks to you like that, it's actually not offensive.
No, exactly.
You don't feel offended when it's a real honest person saying a real honest thing.
Yeah.
You just think, oh, right, well, yeah, it probably was.
Yeah. So maybe there's a danger in here again about getting too polished, making sure, you know, don't be too overly careful about the presentation or what you promise. It is what it is. Live with it.
I like that to end on.
Lovely. So to wrap up then, what's your inspiration this week, apart from Stroppy Ladies?
I've had lots of lovely inspiration this week. I did another artist interview with Rachel Davis, And for those who know Rachel, she's a psychologist and creativity coach, and she often gets brought on to interviews to talk about that side of things. But I had her in my group to talk about her paintings and her why she works the way she does. And that was super inspirational. But I talked about artist interviews last week. So this week I picked more what I've enjoyed, and it's two things, two recommendations for everybody listening. First one is on Amazon Prime, I think, a TV series called Homecoming, which is based on a podcast, apparently, an absolutely brilliant fictional podcast. And they've turned it into a TV show produced, executive produced by Julia Roberts. And she is in the first season. And then we're now watching the second season, which she's not in, but it's a continuation of the same story. And it's a totally innovative, original, just exciting. It's so creative as a TV.
What's it based around?
Well, it's one of those shows where it's hard to not spoil anything, because when it starts, you have no idea what's happening.
Okay.
And you have to piece together as you go along. And I can't imagine how they did the podcast, because you're watching scenes which seem random and disconnected from one another. And as you go along, you start to find out. But it begins with Julia Roberts as a counselor in some kind of program for veterans who have come back from, I presume it's supposed to be Iraq or Afghanistan or somewhere. But it's very strange, and something strange is clearly going on, and you have
to watch it.
Yeah, so you have to work your way through it. And then the second season begins with something very strange, and just it's amazing. And I don't know yet what happens. So that, definitely watch that. But it's inspiring because it's so creative and so different. It's a bit Hitchcock meets podcast meets modern drama. And the other thing that I've been listening to, which is inspiring in a like negative inspiration way, is this podcast called Guru, which we're on episode 5 now. They haven't released episode 6. And it's about a guy called James Arthur Ray, who I'd never heard of. But he's kind of a Tony Robbins wannabe. And he was very successful. And not spoiling anything, because at the beginning it becomes clear that at one of his events, some people die due to his negligence and not knowing what the hell he's doing and being an egomaniac. People die. And this is the story of how it all happened.
Oh, wow.
And he went to prison, and now he's trying to revive his career, not very successfully, as a guru. But what...
Note to self. Yeah. Never create Alice's idea of the art juice event.
Well, I don't think you would decide to get everybody to do extreme feats of physical endurance at the art juice event, would you? So it did make me think that when people become teachers of any kind and have some kind of knowledge to share, that you've got to be really careful not to start wanting to teach more than perhaps you have any idea about. And in his case, extreme ego, and it sounds like narcissism took over, and, you know, but there is a lesson in there for anybody who is guiding other people, that people will believe what you say and people will do what you tell them to do. A lot of people, and you have to be very aware of keeping, I suppose, humble is the word, or just letting people know, this is just my idea. It's not, you don't have to do it. And I'm not saying it's the only idea. It's just a really, but it's so well done as a podcast too. It's fascinating. And when you get to the end of an episode, you're like, oh, I've got to find out what happens.
Sounds
now.
Good. Sounds good. Is it something to do as well about the source of the motivation? Do you think that's a good check in terms of if you're creating groups or sharing? Because, you know, the example that I shared, that was the mismatch, was that it felt like there was a disconnect between what people had assumed the motivation was. And it seems to me that this story in this is that the motivation for it perhaps is different. So do you think as a safety net, one of the safety nets in this is to make sure what is the purpose of you doing it, sharing it, leading, Is that a way that's going to help stop us make these mistakes, or is there no way?
Because I think they don't say this in the podcast really, but I think he had come to see himself as a kind of God figure over the people who were coming.
Yeah, that's never going to lead to anything good, is it, really?
No, and so his motivations by the end, besides being about money, obviously, were about power, I think, and, you know, leading a group of people to... So, yeah, let's not do walking over hot coals if we ever do our art juice event, although that's not what they did, but let's not do that.
Promise we won't. Okay, so mine is almost the exact opposite side of the same coin. So I was getting to the studio early. I have really enjoyed listening to Radio 4 again this week. I'm not going to share everything that I listened to, but this, I was listening to this. It's 15 minutes. It's called Forethought, four as in the number, and I'll put a link to the show notes. There is a podcast, but this, I can't see this episode has appeared on the podcast yet. But on the BBC website, there is a place where you can download it. And this episode is the episode of the 15th of July, and it's titled Change Through Engagement. And it's a 15-minute talk from somebody called Mohammed Hashi, who grew up in Stockwell, which is a part of southeast London near to Brixton. It's near to where I grew up. It's not a wealthy area of London at all. And he is talking about his schooling, how out of his year group of 200 people, only 7 people left with 5 grades, you know, GCSE or something, and about how he went on, I'm going to get the exact degrees wrong, but he went on to a sixth form college, and he went on and he took a science degree, biochemistry, PhD, just all sorts of things. And he is now the first Somalian counsellor in his area. But he was talking about his experience of working through all these things, working as a teacher, going back to the community that he serves, how he had actually been the victim of a stabbing and a shooting, but his car kept getting stopped because it was marked as a car that had been involved in a shooting, even though he was the victim of it. And it, you know, it's just, but just the way that he was talking about his experiences, what he's done in his life, how he's now working on kind of local level to support other people. I really, really, truly inspirational 15 minutes. And I've been thinking about it all week.
That sounds really good. I'm going to have a listen.
Yeah, it's lovely. So it's just, you know, it was just really, you know, one, these things just come in and, you know, good things still. There's good things still in the world.
I think we forget that, don't we? We forget that there's more good things than bad things, and there's more good people than bad people.
Yeah, I made the mistake of watching the news one day this week. That was not a good move.
No, there's nothing good on there, is there? Really?
What with ice caps, global weather changing, enormous arguments with China, and now it's just like, oh, okay.
Pandemic getting worse again.
Turn that one off. Anyway, happy painting, everybody.
Yeah, we didn't end on a very cheerful note, did we?
So we'll leave that with you. A couple of good things to listen to then while you're painting. So very happy painting or sculpturing or weaving or jewellery making or drawing or washing the kitchen floor or whatever it is that you're doing. Maybe we should have that as a challenge. Take a photograph of yourself with whatever you're doing and share it on Instagram. Hashtag Art Juice Podcast, and then we can all see what everybody's doing while they listen.
Oh, I love that idea. You just came up with that, didn't you? Just out of the blue, you went.
I told you. I'm on fire.
Ideas this week.
We'll see you again next week, and thank you very much for being part of Art Juice and listening to us again today. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Little bit fuzzy headed this morning. We decided to open a bottle of port last night.
Oh, I've never had port.
Well, it's one of those things that you keep getting given them, or get given them at Christmas, and it sits in the cupboard and you never have it. And then at the beginning of lockdown, we're like,